Can I ask you something on the air that should be off the air? Is that all right?
Oh, this makes me nervous.
I found out something about you, some honor that you're receiving. Is that not for air? You should receive, if you don't want to talk about it, we don't have to, but whatever it is, congratulations.
Well, I'd like to hear about
it. Steve, it's a big honor, but it's not for air.
Well, I think
it should be. No, it's for air, but it's not.
Not yet.
No, yeah.
In the future, maybe, you can talk about it. But it's a big, Steve, are you sitting down?
I am sitting down.
You should stand up. Because Wendy has this huge honor that we'll discuss probably in, December, January, February? When do you want to talk about it? It's a big deal. Congratulations. I didn't know you were bestowed this honor.
I'm very proud of you. I don't know what for
thank
exactly, but I'm
we are very proud of you.
I can mention it.
No.
There are two. Which one of the two honors?
Two honors?
Two. I know. This is really a big year for
me. Look at you.
Twinsies.
I am going to be finally put on the Wall of Fame at my high school, Riverside Brookfield High School.
Get to the big one. Tell everybody the big one.
It is pretty big. I only graduated in 81. It only took them forever.
Did you get so you've got the diploma. You got the diploma.
You got a diploma.
I think they're going to sneak me it now that I'm on the wall.
An honorary diploma? What the wall is who so far besides yourself? Who else is on the wall?
I don't know. I got to be honest with you. I don't know.
Probably
Michael Taus, who's a chef who owns the Taus House.
Oh, the owner of the Taus House.
He's got some restaurant downtown.
Yeah.
Kathy Case, who was a muckety muck at Playboy and AOL.
Oh.
I haven't looked at the wall. I don't know who is on there with me.
All right.
I know that my son Michael went to LT, and the biggest name on there is David Hasselhoff.
That's pretty big.
I'm going to be the David Hasselhoff of RB.
What's wrong with that?
That's September.
It'll be popular in Germany.
September 21st, I believe.
Can you run in slow motion?
Yes, I can. Have you seen me run?
I know you can walk in slow motion.
Okay, Gimpy.
All right, so that's honor number one. And did you just find out about this?
About a month ago.
That's pretty good. All right, so that's good. But listen to this. Steve, listen to this.
I am also getting this year's Impressa Award, which is given by the Women's Division of the Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans, and they give this award so they can preserve and record for history the lives and accomplishments of Italian American women.
That's fantastic.
Good for you.
That's outstanding. Is this something you've been striving toward? Were you hoping at some point in your life were you going, that's the award I'm going to win, I bet?
No, but there are a lot of Italian American women. Dina Bear has won it.
Yeah.
Karen Conti, who's on this radio station.
Yeah.
Allison Rosati, and I'm just honored to be part
of it.
That's
some pretty good company.
And Phyllis Shaney, who is getting this together, wants to meet you and said, invite whoever you want. It would be nice if Bill Leff would come there for the award ceremony, and Bill said he's busy.
I got something.
Is that the only person she mentioned?
She should have mentioned Steve.
Right, Steve would go.
I know Steve would go. I'm gonna try my best to go.
Listen, I don't want you there.
No, I
because you will just ruin it.
I won't ruin it. How would I ruin it? What's the meal?
I don't know. I would imagine
better
pasta.
Be Italian food.
It should be
because if it's Panda Express, something's gone wrong.
although
that
like
would get
it.
Me in. If there was orange,
orange
chicken, I would definitely. Yeah, then I would go. Well,
yeah.
You must feel good about this.
I do
really
feel good
news.
About this. I had
two honors.
Yeah, it's humbling.
So far, what is with the exception of these two we just mentioned? What is the highest honor you've received prior to this?
I think I got a mention on the Triton College famous alumnus page.
You're doing all right,
but no award to speak of.
They should give you something, certificate or something.
I think that's it.
That's excellent. Steve, do you have a big honor that you've had in the past?
Well, I have an honor every Monday through Friday when I sit down with the two of you.
Thank you.
Well, he is on the Walk of Fame.
On the WGN Walk of Fame. That's not bad.
Perhaps I'll get in this year and not you. Wouldn't that suck?
That would be great. I would love that. That would be the best thing in the world.
No,
I would love that.
No, we're a package deal.
Because I would spray paint my name on your star.
Yes, you would. You still may. If we ever make it. Although, where are we going to put these stars when we move?
Oh, we're moving, right.
Do we just wear them as a sandwich board like Bertrand has to wear his every day?
Yeah. Yep.
I would do that.
Plan. They're heavy.
That's the plan.
I wouldn't wear mine. I'd wear Tom Peterson's maybe or someone else's.
Right. It's not cool. Like if you're an athlete, yeah. you wouldn't wear your own jersey.
No.
You wouldn't walk around town with your own jersey on.
Actually, if you were an athlete, you would wear your own jersey.
During the game.
Yeah. Okay. Just during the game.
During the game.
Ted's on the line. Hi, Ted.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We're good.
Ted, we're very proud of Wendy. She's got two awards.
Absolutely. Congratulations, Wendy.
Thank you. I didn't want to talk about this just
yet. It's not for air.
Well, this isn't on the air anyway, right?
No. This is just us.
Yeah. Our whole show's not on the air.
Okay. Well, good. Since it's not on the air, Bill, you've got to go. You're going to miss one heck of a meal.
I'm going. I'm going to go.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't go, Wendy's going to lord that over you until...
Forever.
You know what? I really won't.
No,
it's
I'm
far away, and, you know, that's okay. I wanted to invite my family, and then, you know, I know Larry Wirt is an Italian-American, so I thought maybe he would go. Todd Manley
also. Do you have
also.
To be Italian?
No, but I just, you know. No, you don't.
I want to go. I'm learning. I'm going to brush up. I'm going to speak fluent Italian. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to say something Italian to everybody. Something.
Orange chicken.
Right.
they'll just convince themselves they're really wealthy Panda Express there. I have
to get in. Ted, thank you so much for
Thanks,
the support.
Ted. Can Ted be my plus one?
There is no plus one.
There is no plus one. All right.
Darn it.
Yeah. Next time.
Thanks, Ted.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ted.
All right.
I know a bunch of words from The Godfather that I could say in Italian.
That'll go over very well there. Jeez. I told you I don't want you there.
Now I really want to go. Like at first I was kind of on the fence, but
no,
the more I hear about this, the more I say I want to go. It's interesting that the woman who's the coordinator mentioned me by name. I don't know why that
would
be.
Because she's a fan. She listens every day.
Oh, that's so nice. That's very nice.
Which if she listens every day, why am I up to uphold these Italian-American women traditions? Because really?
That's
I don't
curious.
Know.
Is it like, you know how if you get into a sports hall of fame, they have somebody bring you up, somebody introduces you and says a few words? Is that the case with this?
I don't really have, this is still embryonic right
now.
You. I don't know. I had to answer some essay questions. I had to write a CV, which I didn't even know what a CV was.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
Curricula vitae or something. It's
Latin.
It's kind of like...
Well, Latin, I mean, that's, you know, they're Italians.
That's impressive. Right.
But it's like a resume, but accomplishments you've made, not just like past work things.
Oh, that's so cool. And so, there were essay questions.
Yes.
Like what? Can you give me one example? What was one of them?
Why I'm proud to be an American, Italian-American woman.
What'd you say?
I don't want to reveal all my stuff here.
Someone else will steal it.
Just show us some of your stuff.
You think someone else would steal it,
Who is the most influential person of my life? I put Bill Leff.
You should have put somebody Italian. You should have. I would have put somebody
Italian.
My
mom.
Paul Anka I would have put.
Could have put Tom Dreesen.
Oh, yeah. Tom Dreesen's part Italian.
He'll probably come.
I know. He's definitely going. It'll be fun.
All right, stop it.
We'll take a quick break. It's Bill Leff and the highly celebrated Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I am nervous Nelly today. I got a lot of stuff going on.
What's up?
We had 1-800-GOT-JUNK come out today, to pick up an old dining room table because I'm getting a new dining room table.
Sure. Now that you're in the Italian American Hall of Fame, live
That's
it
what
up.
They do right away, right to the table.
Always get a new table.
But Jim was, responsible for having them take away the stuff and I'm scared of what Jim may have pointed to because I accumulate a lot of crap.
Oh.
And you know, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, you can call them at any time. They're open 24/7. I called to make an arrangement on a Saturday and they're like, "What? Do you want me to come tomorrow?" I'm like, "No, Monday would be good."
They're incredibly efficient and do a nice job, don't they?
Yeah, but I have too much junk.
Yeah.
I just have too much junk. And what I like about 1-800-GOT-JUNK is if it's something they can upcycle or give to someone, they do. If mm-hmm. not, they trash it.
Right. They do it right.
So I got that going on, and my son Michael is going camping today for 3 days.
Uh-huh.
He has never camped before.
Well, that shouldn't weigh on you. Why are you nervous?
What if he gets eaten by a bear?
Where's he going?
I don't know. I don't know.
You didn't ask?
Well, let's start.
Well, I did. He's doing a road trip with a couple of friends before they all split and go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing the Illinois tour.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to Springfield, to Decatur. They're just going all around and camping.
Fun. He should be all right.
Yeah, well, the Decatur, a lot of bears in Decatur.
There's not as many. Right. There was a time where they used to call Decatur Beartown, you know that, but that was like a year ago.
They called them the Staleys, right. And then they came to Chicago. And
they did, right.
I'm going to the Bears game, the opening game on Thursday.
If you want to be nervous about something, that's what should make you nervous, is that. By the way, Jay Cutler over the weekend signed a deal with the Miami Dolphins.
Just to make you mad.
Here's a question. Does Miami have any way of doing things like looking up stats or seeing game films or reading newspaper accounts of what Jay Cutler hasn't done in the past? Why would you sign Jay Cutler to any kind of a deal?
He was cheaper than both Bears' new quarterbacks, all Bears' new quarterbacks, if I'm not mistaken.
And the coordinator over there was that who it
Pace?
Is?
Yeah.
Who was with the Bears, who's now with Miami?
Right. But he must have seen him like when he
was
working.
Oh, he wasn't looking. He just knows the name.
I'm so shocked by this. So I guess this means that the NFL just doesn't want any part of Colin Kaepernick anymore because he's still available. I would take Colin Kaepernick over Jay Cutler 1,000 times in a row.
You and I were talking about this last week because I said, wouldn't that be a hoot and a half if Cutler goes to Miami because you're a big Dolphins fan?
Yeah. I was until this weekend.
I know that he did it just to bug you because everything you've said on the air, I think he did that intentionally.
Just to mess with me? Now, years ago, the Bears had a head coach named Dave Wannstedt who was as ineffective as you could possibly be. He just wasn't
great
good.
Mustache, though.
He did have
half
a tremendous mustache. He had a tremendous mustache. And when he was done with the Bears as their head coach, I went, well, there's a guy that'll never be a head coach again, ever.
Wrong.
But Miami said, you're just the type of guy we're looking for.
So is Miami where all the non-effective football players and coaches go to die?
Miami is the love boat of the NFL.
Oh, it is.
They will take anybody who's no longer effective and just go, we've got a place for you.
Except
our arms are open.
Colin Kaepernick, and maybe that's why he's not going there, because although he hasn't had great playing experience.
He started out red hot,
yep.
And then that
fizzled.
Ended. But I would, if it was up to me and I had both of those guys available, I would take Colin Kaepernick every time.
A lot of stuff goes with Colin, a lot of baggage with Colin Kaepernick, though.
There's no doubt about that.
And no Kristen Cavallari.
No Kristen Cavallari. And you also have to have a helmet, a specially made helmet, a larger helmet made. He's got a lot of hair.
Strange anomaly in all of this. Jay Cutler will have only played for blue and orange teams.
Oh, that's true.
Denver, Chicago, and now
Broncos. Yeah, that's true. But he has a penchant for throwing to teams that are wearing other colors.
This is true, yeah.
You'd think he'd get the orange figured out.
Right.
That's why they, you know, he's like, I can only sign with orange, you know,
right.
Blue and orange, so I know who to throw to, and
right.
Still.
Do the Dolphins play the Bears at all this upcoming season?
I don't think so. I was hoping. I got to see.
Oh,
it'll look real bad if he comes and beats
that
us.
That would be the one game I would have to see for the Bears this year. Although he's proven in the past he can't throw to Bears receivers, so he wouldn't throw any interceptions that game. That'd be the best game the Dolphins have all season.
I couldn't believe, because we talked about this, and I was thinking they'd take Colin Kaepernick probably.
Right.
And we both were talking about that, and when I saw it over the weekend, I saw the knife go in your back, and it was twisted by Jay Cutler.
It just shows, it's almost like, you know how everybody rags on participation trophies, and they say, what's happened to America? All you have to do is show up, and you win an award. Jay Cutler didn't even show up. He was there, but he wasn't there. And yet another team said, we've got a lot of money if you're interested.
Not that much money, though. I guess it's
over
$10 million.
If it's over $1 million, in my head, it's a lot of money.
I think he's got a shot to have a decent year.
Oh, I think he's going to soar. He's going to excel.
You know, just knowing Chicago's luck, he's probably going to be the best
ever. It's going to look real bad if he goes out and just lights it up and then, you know, Glennon and Trubisky and whoever else doesn't at all.
So that would reflect on Bears ownership or management, right? If he does well with another team, I don't think he's going to. But
he was kind of uncoachable. That's all I can say.
That's the perfect way to describe him.
Well, this is the one guy. Adam Gase was the one guy. He had his best season under Adam Gase.
You're right.
So we'll see.
I couldn't believe it. And so now, who are you going to hate more, the Bears or Miami?
That's a good question.
Bill, the good news is he won't be calling the Bears opening game.
Right.
I'm bummed about that.
He might have actually excelled at that because
he
couldn't play football. Who knows? Maybe he would have been a great announcer.
But don't you think that he had, wouldn't you characterize him as having a weird disinterest in football?
In everything.
In everything, right? He just
Look
seemed...
who he's married to, and even in pictures, he's like, yeah, whatever.
I know. He just doesn't have any kind of zest or enthusiasm. He's just very complacent, you know?
Yeah,
unflappable.
Yes. Unflappable, I guess.
Which, that could be good in some circumstances.
Normally it would be good, and I like when unflappable is tagged on somebody that excels at something, because you go, well, that's okay. He's so even-tempered, good, bad, or indifferent. Look, he's always got the same attitude. But you could say that about Jay Cutler, but there wasn't any the good part of bad and indifferent wasn't part of the equation. He just, every Sunday, just was average at best, and sometimes way below average.
Well, I'll keep you.
Good luck, Miami.
I'll keep you posted on Trubisky and or Glennon.
Let me know.
As I go to the Bears opener on Thursday all right. with all my girlfriends.
That'll be fun.
It will be fun. I'm not going to watch the game.
Well, they'll only play, you know, they don't play very long. So.
No.
What do you mean?
Well, it's
the better players don't really play much in these games.
Well, they're going to have to, the quarterbacks will play because they have to figure out what they're doing with them.
Right, right.
I'll watch a little.
See, yeah.
I want some Bloody Marys and
that's
sausages.
That's the reason to go. All right, we will take a break.
That's the name of my book, by the way.
The Italian award winner.
Yep.
I hail from Wisconsin sometimes.
Sausage and a bloody.
That's all you need. Everything's fine. All right. We will take a break. We've got news. And then one of our favorite pop culture icons of all time, Andy Warhol. There's a great exhibit about him and a book. We'll talk about that in a little while. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Have him on my whoa. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Can we talk Andy Warhol for a minute?
I would love to. What's the first thing, when you think about Andy Warhol, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
It's funny because I was going to ask you that, and it's Campbell's soup. Tomato soup.
Campbell's soup, yeah, definitely that. For me, it would be that magnificent tan that he always had. He was always very tan.
Natasha Fraser Cavassoni is on the line with us. Am I saying your name right, Natasha?
Absolutely.
Welcome, and thanks for joining us. You've written a book, After Andy, Adventures in Warhol Land, and I'm kind of pretty sure you're the one to write this because you were the last person hired at Andy Warhol's studio before he passed away in 1987. Is that correct?
Absolutely, and I first of all like to emphasize it was a visit to the Art Institute of Chicago.
Wow.
It inspired me to write this book, because I saw the giant Mao, and I thought, I suddenly remembered everything. It's wonderful talking to you.
That's excellent.
I just went to the Rolling Stones exhibitionism display at Navy Pier, and of course there's amazing works of art by Andy Warhol when he did portraits of Mick. Everyone has a story or a thought in their head. I think of Marilyn Monroe all the time. As I mentioned to Bill, I always think of tomato soup when I hear of Andy Warhol. He was a pretty amazing guy.
He was extraordinary. He was a prophet. He got everything. He was a precursor for, social media. Do you think that when I met him, I was 16 and he had a camera in his hand and a tape recorder in the other? And the camera, he wasn't looking through it. And I said, Andy, perhaps you should look through that. He was also taping our conversation. I believe he called his tape recorder my wife.
Oh.
You got to admit, as Bill mentioned, he had a great tan.
Yeah.
And he was very eclectic, to say the least.
Yes. I have to say, so much has been written about him. I found him terribly positive. I believe it's a quote you... The first time written, actually, in my book after Andy, I've got to keep the lights on. That's something that Andy said continuously to the young men and women who worked for him. You know, when he went out to Studio 54, he always had the pile of interview magazines in hand. He was always working, thinking, making money. Making money to him was another art.
Explain this to me, Natasha, because I never understood this about Andy Warhol. Is that you would see him everywhere. He was at parties at Studio 54. He was wherever the elite would meet. He was in the center of that. But he seemed painfully shy. How could you be both?
I think you can be. I think he really was. I think he was amoeba-like in the way that he was very, you know, after the assassination attempt, you can imagine he was very, very wary of anyone coming near him. Yet, he had this incredible curiosity. I think Andy's curiosity and work ethic motivated everything else. He really had. I mean, when I spoke to him, I couldn't believe his references. There was no Geo Great, which he used as a sort of self-protective thing. It was, he was very curious.
Yeah.
And so, yes, he was shy, but his need to know was stronger, which I find extremely admirable.
You know, it's weird. Art is kind of something that gets a reaction out of you, and it, Andy Warhol's art does that for me. Although, when you think about it, it's just very simplistic.
Absolutely. But if you, it's like everything. And actually, I was inspired by this when writing my book. You know, Andy's work is as light or as layered as you want, because he was this incredible technician. And and he made it look easy. I think that was Andy's problem. You know, at one point, the art establishment turned against him because they said he's trite because he made it look easy. And yet we look now, and it's timeless, which really is another sign of his brilliance or genius, to push it further.
Go back for just a second, Natasha. Something you just said was a question I was going to ask you at some point anyway, but since you brought it up, the art world did turn on him. He had such high reviews early on, and then there was kind of a shifting of gears, and people, a lot of art critics said some very awful things about him and his work. How did that affect him? Was that bothersome to him?
Well, that's what I find admirable. Of course it hurt him. And in his diaries, published in 1988, the sort of, I found the more interesting stuff was the Andy Agonistes, where he says, why do people take, his contemporaries? Sorry, I'm having a flag, the artist. Anyway, why did they take his Jasper Johns more seriously than me? Why did he have many more collectors? They did turn on him.
They did.
They turned on him after he was assassinated in the assassination attempt in 1968. The art establishment felt that he had, dried up. He didn't have ideas. And that's when his business manager, Fred Hughes, said, let's do Europe. And Andy's first retrospective was in Sweden,
mm-hmm.
not in America, mm. to give an idea.
All right. I was just reading that was Andy Warhol's birthday yesterday, the 6th?
Absolutely. He would have been 89.
Wow. Hard to imagine.
It is hard to imagine that. And people went to Bethel Park to write things on his what would have been his 89th birthday. He was a Pittsburgh native, grew up in Oakland, attended Carnegie Institute of Technology, now Carnegie Mellon University, moved to New York where he started as a commercial artist, which really, I'm sorry I didn't know that, but it totally makes sense knowing that now.
Sure, yeah. Would it be...
He started in shoes. I mean, he did all these, amazing. If you look at his illustrations now, he was the most fantastic draftsman. And only a draftsman could have made magic with images of Jackie Kennedy, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis. If you think when he died, Elvis was $400,000, and now it's probably 80 to 90.
Wow. Natasha, would you put Andy Warhol in that bracket? There are certain people that are better as observers. And it just seemed like with the way he would always have a camera and always be interviewing people, he almost liked being an outsider looking in than being part of the picture himself.
I think, yes, I think he liked that. I think he liked being outside in order to observe. It was a sort of rolling camera, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But what Andy had was this incredible nose or flair for people. He could look. You know, a lot of people see things and don't edit. He edited. He realized what would work and what was and what wouldn't work, which I find, considering his daily life was extraordinary. I would be exhausted. I mean, just one day I'd be flat out on the carpet.
I'm sure at some point you've noticed this. I noticed this early on about Andy Warhol's work. A lot of it is repetitive. I don't mean that in a bad way, but he'll take an image and just keep duplicating it with a slight color variation or something. What was behind that, do you think?
No, I think he started. It was a revolution, that. It was a revolution. Now we see it everywhere. Now we see it everywhere. We see it in fashion, in advertising. I think he was trying out things.
Yeah.
you know, I think everything was a tryout if it worked. And what I find really admirable regarding your question about being attacked by the critics, and he was attacked, is he carried on. There was no sort of lying in bed, I can't. He carried on. It was that work ethic. I've got to keep the lights on. You know, he was, you know, to him, you had to sell. Business was another art.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I just find very modern and non-self-indulgent.
We're talking to Natasha Fraser Cavassoni, and the book is called After Andy, Adventures in Warhol Land. I was watching the now canceled HBO show Vinyl, and Andy Warhol, there was a character who played Andy in here, and he was hanging out with the whole scene, hanging out in some instances where it looked like he was in bed with people. But now, is it true that he remained a virgin?
I can't answer that. My foot, remember. Because I was born in 1963, and I met him in 1980. My book really deals with the sort of latter decade. I mean, you've got incredible books dealing with the factory years, the 1960s. What I think is interesting about my book, or relevant, it really deals with what hasn't been written about before. You know, his years in Europe, his English muffins, that was well-born English women who worked in the factory. And then, you know, his impact now. So I sort of deal with everything that isn't the 60s.
Natasha, what do you think is the biggest misconception about Andy Warhol?
That he was unkind.
Yeah, because that was featured in Vinyl, too, that there were some times where he was kind of bitchy, in a way, to other people. But he wasn't?
No, I think he was. I think Andy was amoeba-like. Like I said, I think he was very, very self-protective. I mean, he was no saint, but I think he was very kind to people. All the young people I spoke to, you know, or even Bob Colicello, who worked for him in the 70s and 80s, said, you know, Andy gave us more than we gave him.
Yeah. Did he understand the role he plays in the history of pop art? Does he understand the appreciation that we all have of him, or was that lost on him?
That's a very interesting question, because Andy, who, as we know, liked money, used to refer to his 60s pop art as his rainy day painting, i.e. they were sure sells. So he knew his place. But like many an artist, like people I've worked with, such as Karl Lagerfeld at Chanel, he was interested in the future. He was looking forward. He wasn't looking back. There was no nostalgia about his creative work.
I have some information here that, you know, you consider Andy Warhol's work as very brightly colored and really jumps out at you. But did he also paint some darker subjects like plane crashes and things like that?
Yes. I mean, they were incredible. Yes, they were dark. It wasn't all the jolly colors. But what was interesting about him, he also did jolly colors with the atomic bomb. And, you know, he was mixing, he was trying things out, and it caught one's attention because, yes, he was using these pop colors, and yet, yes, he was capturing that anguish.
Even if he did a painting of an electric chair, was that brightly colored or dark and dismal?
Yeah, he's done a series, so there were blues, and there were lots of different colors. I mean, he caught that time in America. It's hard not to look, I find, to look at those electric chairs, all those car crashes, all Jackie Kennedy at the funeral looking Mary Magdalene-like, and not feel an emotion, a strong emotion.
And a lot of the prints had repeats, you know, there were several versions of the same picture over and over again, and there are reports, too, that Andy took that into his personal life and had a body double. Do you know anything about that?
Meet his body double. I think one was enough.
I guess.
But with his wigs, I mean, one of my favorite stories in the book is a woman coming into his Paris apartment, the only apartment he had outside of America. And she walked in and she saw the lineup of like 12 different wigs, and they were all cut differently.
Really?
Yes. It wasn't just one wig. What I find interesting, because Andy was very Catholic, is when he met the Pope, he wore a very like normal sort of very low key wig, whereas when he was when he did his fright wig, those amazing self portraits, he wore a mad Fiorucci kind of punky wig.
They all look the same to me, to be honest with you. I always envision his hair looking the same all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what about this? When I met him, just to give you an idea of my eccentric relative, I didn't realize it was a wig.
Oh, wow. Wow. Natasha, when I was growing up, if you wanted to read the definitive interview of anybody, you had two sources. The Playboy magazine interview was always really well done, and the interviews in Interview magazine were always incredibly well done. You really got to the base of whoever that person was. How did that come about, the magazine? I mean, I know he was a great artist almost immediately, but how did that magazine evolve?
Well, it was going to be an extension of his work. And he was very lucky because he had this brilliant young guy, Bob Conicello. I mean, the early interview magazines are pretty, a bit like sort of reality TV.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst type of reality TV. And then it was Bob Conicello, who was a film student, who took it in hand and made it interesting. But every time there was an interesting piece, Andy would say it was too interesting.
Really?
Yeah, he wanted to keep it bland. He was in 2017.
Yeah.
He was not in 1970s. I mean, again, I did have a column interview, but 1988. And they certainly started that, both Playboy and Interview, you know, that way, that interview question and answer, which no one else did.
Right, right.
Well, I'm completely intrigued. I haven't read it yet. We just got it in, but I will be. It's called After Andy, Adventures in Warhol Land. Natasha Fraser Cavassoni. You can get this where favorite books are sold. Amazon, I would imagine. And do you have a website?
Oh, I would also love to push your wonderful independent bookstores like Barbara's Bookstore,
yep.
Newbury Library, Hudson Booksellers, and if I'm pronouncing this right, Wicker's Park Secret Agent, and lots of fantastic books. You know, I love my mother, the writer Antonia Fraser, loves Chicago because she's always had you read. She always says people in Chicago read. It's the most fantastic city. So let's push those marvelous independent bookstores.
Anderson's as well, there are several locations. Bill and I often talk about the lack of bookstores where you could just go and browse and physically touch the book and pick something good. So hopefully people will pick up After Andy. Do you have a website for people who want to get in touch with you?
I'm on Instagram, and it's called Ticklish Tash, because I only post things that tickle me. Ticklish Tash. Or, of course, I'm on the Penguin Random House author site.
Ticklish Tash for Natasha Fraser Cavassoni. Thank you so much. Pleasure to talk to you.
Great pleasure. Pleasure all mine too.
Thanks, Natasha. Have a great week. All right, we'll take a quick break and then we have a lot more show for you. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I have some Andy Warhol facts.
Share them. He really, for people who weren't around when Andy Warhol was a prominent art figure, he was such a strange, peculiar guy, a fantastic artist. But anytime you'd see him, there were two people when I was growing up, if they showed up somewhere, I'd go out of my way to see just because they were so different. And it was Truman Capote and Andy Warhol. If they were on a show,
combo.
I would watch them and go, wow.
I mentioned Andy always insisted he was a virgin throughout his life. The charismatic artist always insisted he was asexual and he never, ever had sex.
Oh, how about that?
He made 24-hour long movies.
Yeah.
He was the first to merge cinema with music. I didn't realize that.
I'm trying to think of what that would have been.
Velvet Underground. In the mid-60s,
oh, yeah.
Andy began working with the Velvet Underground. He saw them as a project, worked with them to release his own artistic and commercial ambitions. The result was that the band toured in front of a backdrop of Andy's movies that he had made.
If I can go back to the 24-hour movie thing, not good.
Oh, no?
Just so you know. No, because he was under the belief that you didn't have to really have it scripted or storyline. He would just have the camera running on things.
For 24 hours?
Yeah. Not always good.
Well, the names of his 24-hour-long films, Stars.
Yeah.
Empire.
Yeah.
And Sleep.
Yeah.
I would watch the Sleep one.
What you do during the movie.
And then this was pretty interesting because I know you can't do this. Andy always preferred to eat alone.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
He was never much of a man for eating around others and indeed preferred to eat by himself. In fact, he preferred to eat by himself so much that he dreamed of opening a chain of restaurants that would be called Andy Mats. I don't know, like
so
Photo
you would
Mat
just,
or something?
Just tables for one at every in every place?
The
wow.
tagline, the restaurant for the lonely person.
I can't imagine so that weird. Not winning. That everybody would want to visit that.
Yeah, but you wouldn't feel so bad because sometimes we all have to eat alone, whether yeah. you're on away on business or you
right.
are hungry and you have no one to eat lunch with. So wouldn't it make it easy if every table was just
I guess so.
Single-seated?
Yeah, I guess.
He was really weird.
He was a real weird, a strange man. All right, a break, some news, and then a lot more show. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I love this song.
It's a great song.
Don't understand.
Very Beatles influenced.
Very.
Wouldn't you
no
agree?
Matter what.
Yeah. Yep. So the reason we're playing this song is the band is Badfinger, and Badfinger plays very directly into a story, a hideous story out of Virginia, where a girls' softball team was disqualified from their tournament, their championship softball tournament. Because the team decided in the team photo to flip off the camera, and some say their opponents.
So they're disqualified from the
yes.
tournament.
Yes, because it is conduct unbecoming of a group of girls who are ages 12 to 14. So people were very upset and said, you can't be flipping off the camera and possibly the other team. You're disqualified.
I hate to scream this, so I won't scream.
Use your inside screaming voice.
Do you think they would have been disqualified if they were boys?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Yeah. I think that probably what's at issue is it's considered to be bad sportsmanship, and it's also their ages. You know, you don't, even though realistically your average 12 to 14-year-old has flipped somebody off, has given the finger to somebody...
Yeah,
right? Don't you imagine?
Yeah,
that it just looks bad for a group, and more than likely, their coaches or manager probably saw this and went, "Yeah, fine, that's fine. You can flip off the camera, so
well,
it makes everyone look bad."
I think if the coaches really saw it, they would have said, "Guys, we got to pose for another picture."
Right,
like that's the fun picture. Now let's do the real one.
Well, the picture that I keep seeing online. The girls are not flipping off the camera. They're just smiling and taking a regular team photo. So they must have taken at least one other picture, but it's the one where they're flipping off the camera and the other team possibly that has caused the issue. A girls' softball team from Virginia learned a hard lesson about social media. After a victory, you should think twice about gloating over your opponent on their home turf, especially if the chosen method of gloating is posting a photo on social media of six teammates flipping the bird under the caption, "Watch out, host." The 12 to 14-year-olds who make up the Atlee Junior League softball team from Mechanicsville, Virginia.
Hmm.
I don't know how they got their name. Do you?
Mm-mm. You and I could not live there.
No. We would be banned from Mechanicsville, Virginia. Learned the hard way on Saturday when they were disqualified from the nationally televised championship game at the Junior League World Series in Kirkland, Washington, after one team member posted that photo on her Snapchat account following a victory on Friday. The team apologized on Saturday, I'm guessing a lot.
So just because of one person who put it up on Snapchat, it got out there?
That's all it took. Yeah. That's
that
all it took.
That girl is going to be hated. They're going to stick
her
in the outfield.
Is it in right field?
Yeah.
Is it that girl's fault or is it the six girls who flipped off the camera's fault? Didn't you have there was a kid in our grade school that snuck in the finger in a class photo
back when we were growing up? Because that
yeah.
surprises me back then.
Yeah, he snuck that in, and then well, this isn't a finger, but Cal Ripken's brother Billy Ripken wrote something obscene on the bottom of his baseball bat. So there's a baseball card where the bottom of his baseball bat says something very obscene.
Really?
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
is this?
Billy Ripken. He's more famous for that. It's really strange. But in his career, He's famous, number one, for being the brother of Cal Ripken, number two, for this particular baseball card, and number three, for his playing prowess.
That's terrible.
That is terrible.
That was on a baseball card?
Yeah, it made the baseball card.
How much
card.
Money is that worth if you have
it's
it?
It's worth a lot of money.
Bless you, Kevin.
He probably did it, you know, because he didn't make a whole lot of money.
He wrote that on it?
Yeah. You found it online?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's,
face is the end of it. And
you can say face, but it's the first part that seems very...
Why did he do that?
Just to make his teammates laugh.
I'm
to
sure
make
it
the
did.
Other Baltimore Orioles laugh. All right. Here's my story about the finger. Now, I don't swear much. I hardly ever swear at all. But to me, the finger is a very funny thing.
See, I see them being funny, although when you put it with the caption, Bill, where it's like, don't come on art, or, you know,
right.
Then it's like
take
not
that.
Funny anymore.
Yeah, because they already won the game. There's no reason. Why risk it at that
yeah.
point? Just take your team picture, right? All right. When I was a kid, my mom was yelling at me about something ridiculous at one point. And while she was yelling at me, I flipped her off. I just held up my finger.
How old were you?
Flipped her off, like nine or 10. And she just laughed so hard because of the audacity of that. You know, like, what's wrong with me that I would turn that situation into a, here, I have something for you. Right? So from then on...
Little Billy is growing up. That's what she probably thought.
That became a thing. Like, anytime she'd get mad at me, I would cover my hand, but she knew what I was flipping her off, and she thought it was very funny. It always diffused the situation. Then when I became a stand-up comic and I got to work with celebrities, what I would do is I would take a picture of me and the celebrity flipping my mom off, and on our refrigerator door, she had about 20 or 30... pictures of me with famous people, and we were flipping her off. Her favorite one was when I was shooting Major League, I got everybody in the stands, like several thousand people, to flip off my mom.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God, is that funny?
I loved it, and she loved it. Like, that would be a Mother's Day present, is I would give her a picture of me and a celebrity flipping her off, and she just loved it. And I know that's
she had a great sense of humor.
Unconventional, but it's just, it's funny because it's so, it's
so not
it's
you.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But see, I don't know. Everybody uses that finger, and it's more as a
it's
goof.
Usually angry. It's all you know. Everybody handles it a little differently.
But in
right?
a picture, it's right. funny. You either
right.
do rabbit ears
or the flip off.
Yeah,
right.
I
yeah.
can't believe they were disqualified to play. I guess it is bad sportsmanship.
That's
but...
the biggest part of this. This is the question involved here. Let's say.
Don't we
even
have a billboard with us?
Flipping anybody off?
Our right. new billboard.
What if that was our billboard? Was you and me just going, take this? That wouldn't work. They couldn't do that. But do you disqualify this team for this, or do you just take them aside and say, girls, in the future, think this out a little bit? This, you know, because this is the age of Facebook and social media, and anybody can see anything at any given time. You'd be a little more discreet. It's funny, but somebody's going to be offended by this.
It's inappropriate, and that's what they... But
right.
disqualification to me is
seems
an overreaction.
Much, didn't it? It seemed a little much.
Am I too easy on kids?
See, I don't think you are. I think the troublesome thing was them saying, watch out, host, because that made it a little more pointed, a little
yeah.
more derogatory.
It wasn't a goofy picture anymore. It was like a threat.
It was directed at
yeah.
them. Yeah.
Still,
right?
though, disqualification. Oh, my God. In this day and age, if that's all you do is flip off put your finger up.
Right. But you've seen this in traffic situations where just...
I've done it in traffic situations.
But you see the reaction. Like, sometimes it makes people just as crazy can be. And I have to be honest. There was one time a guy cut me off. I had to swerve into oncoming... A guy pulled out of a parking space into the street that I was driving, and he made me go into the other lane, and
to
I almost
avoid.
Got hit. And as I'm honking at him, he out his window, he holds up the finger to me like, hey, too bad. You know, it, like it became my fault that he almost killed me.
You should have been flipping him off.
Right. Well, because of the positioning of the car, I couldn't.
See, that I got flipped off by a woman. And if you're going to do it, loosen your hand. Don't do it like this really stiff.
Right.
It just bugs me.
The stiff one's worse.
You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know why it is. And you know what's even worse is when you pump up, like you use your other hand, you push your lower arm and make the finger. That, for some reason, that's worse, but I don't know why it's worse.
But the really straight, like,
yeah,
just loosen your hand a little bit if you're going to flip me off.
And the soft flip off.
Yeah, but just do it like all naturally. It's like, it just bugs me. And this lady, same thing, cut me off. And I changed lanes. This was on the inbound Stevenson coming in. And she flipped me off. And I just looked at her and waved.
Oh, yeah.
Because then it's like, really? You're flipping me off? You're the one who deserves to be flipped off. But loosen the hands, people.
Yes.
All right. Can we talk about this?
Yes.
But we have to take a break first.
All right. Stay on the line. If you're on hold, we would love to get your opinions. Should this team have been disqualified? It seems a little much, doesn't it? We're 312-981-7200. Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right. We're talking about the girls. Are they in middle school or middle finger?
They're both. A bunch of 12- and 14-year-old girls, part of the Atlee Junior League softball team. They hail from Mechanicsville, Virginia. And in their team photo, as part of their tournament on Saturday, six of them decided to flip the bird, flip off the finger. You know these kids, Wendy, with their fingers. So the sad ending to the story is they got cut out of the tournament because of their conduct, misconduct. Is that accurate? Is that good? Did we do too much?
I don't know that they should have been disqualified, but I'm easy, I guess. Scott, what do you think?
I think they definitely should have been disqualified. Like you just said, it's conduct. You're representing that league. You can't act like that. Girls of that age shouldn't be acting like that. You know, if they did what they did, buck up your actions. You got disqualified. Too bad for you.
Buck.
That's all there is to it. That's, you know what? That's why we're cutting people off and giving them the finger, because we don't do things about stuff like this now. They got what they deserve. Too bad.
All right.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Sure.
I don't think it's the girls' fault that people are flipping people off for driving.
Yeah, I'm right. No.
It's been going on.
It's been going on for a good long time.
Paul's here. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how are you guys?
I guess we're too lenient.
Yeah, well, you know what? I agree with Scott, the previous caller. Everything that is the permissiveness and the slow degeneration of society and the no consequences for all of these ignorant, stupid things that the young people, as well as the older adults, my generation as well, they do. It's just everything is degenerating downward. And all of these small little incidents like this, which some people may think is not serious, and others think could be, like me, an old fart, okay? But this is where the things start, and it grows from there, and these children grow up with this permissive attitude that they can do anything they want without consequences. Every one of those kids should be disqualified, the team should be disqualified, and then maybe the other kids and the parents will sooner or later wake up and say, start acting like a respectful young person and win the game and move on and get your trophies and go from there.
That's
the way I feel.
Paul, can I suggest something? If it was six members of the team, maybe you sit those six players for a game. You let the other members of the team play the game.
Do they have enough to play then?
Yeah, they'd still have enough. Is that a good compromise?
No, not for me. It's not. Maybe it is for other people, but I mean, it's like anything else. You know, when in the military, you've got a team. If one person screws up, the rest of the team has an opportunity to correct that situation however they do it. And I'm not condoning anything that they may do that's not proper,
right,
or whatever it is. But the other girls on that team that worked just as hard as these six young ladies that did this, okay,
yeah,
they need to go to them and say, hey, listen, you just screwed this up for the rest of us that didn't do that. So don't do it again, and if you do, we're going to do something, yada, yada. We'll take care of it ourselves.
All right,
well, thanks for voicing your opinion, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
See you later.
Take care.
It's a middle finger. It's not a sign that says something I would mean have, or...
Well, but it's what it implies. I guess. You know?
They were being silly, though.
Right. Right. I just think maybe a warning saying if this sort of thing continues, then you get disqualified.
Or even scare them and say, you know, we could disqualify you for this. Right. What do you think you're doing?
Right. And if they flip you off when you say that, then you go, out. That's it.
They're done.
Enough of this.
Hi, Marcia.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. I love you guys.
Thanks, Marcia.
Wow, those people were very heated. And they're, yeah. But I do agree that in this day and age, there's, you know, everyone gets a trophy nowadays. So, I mean, I think it's not a bad idea to have consequences. And I have to say, Wendy, I think your comment about would it happen if it was boys, I don't know. I kind of think that it might be different.
Do you really?
I really truly feel that, and I could be totally off base here.
Why do you think it would be different
because
it was boys?
People expect that. Look at the little kids messing around. Yeah. I just think girls are held to a different standard.
The first caller said something like, you know, it's not a very good for ladies to, you know, behave like this. So, yeah. You know. I don't know, and I am coming from a female perspective, so maybe that's just my perspective, but...
Interesting. Yeah. I wonder. Yeah. I guess there is kind of a, oh, boys being boys.
Yeah.
There is that kind of attitude a lot of times. Oh, all right. I accept that. Well thank you, Marcia.
Thanks, Marcia.
Yep.
Take care.
Yep, bye.
For the record, Wendy just flipped me off. And you're disqualified now. I hope you're happy. You can't play anymore. You're out. All right, we'll take a quick break, some news, and then I'll be here by myself. It's Bill Left Alone on WGN. Domini, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Left and it's Wendy Snyder, joined by our friend Kristen McQueary of the Chicago Tribune. Kristen, off the air, I just asked you a question, and your answer was priceless. I said, did you get to go to Lollapalooza? And your answer was?
I'm too old.
Too old.
I'm way too old for that scene.
Have you ever gone?
I've never gone, and I don't really have any desire to go. I like concerts. I'll go to a concert at United Center, or, you know, I'll go see Coldplay. And,
yeah.
That whole, the Lollapalooza thing, I don't think people understand how much it takes over the entire city.
Sure it does.
Unless you're here. And so I did walk down there on Friday and watched literally just the hordes of people going into Grant Park, and it was loud.
And it was cold on Friday.
And it was cold, and I'm way too grumpy. I'm way too
grumpy. You know, even Kevin, who is right smack dab, our producer Kevin is right smack dab in the middle of the target audience of Lollapalooza, even he said, ah, I can't, the crowds, and it's who needs that?
It's
Isn't
too
much.
It's gotten so much bigger, too. And I think there's cost-benefit questions about how much the city actually spends getting the park ready and with staff. And
but they don't publish those numbers, correct?
They don't. Well, I don't think they publish those numbers, but Jim DeRogatis has done a lot of, he's a rock critic here in the city, and he's done a lot of research. And the city never releases what the real economic impact is on the good side. You know, here's the spike in hotel rooms. Here's how many restaurants. And maybe that's just hard to measure.
Right.
But there are parts of Grant Park that take a year to recover from the destruction
really?
Of Lollapalooza. And you have to remember, that is a city park.
Yeah.
It's not private land where, like Milwaukee, if you've ever gone to Summerfest, they have an area set aside for that.
Right.
So, I mean, as taxpayers, we own that. And if it does have such great economic impact, I'd love to see those numbers, because why are my property taxes continuing to skyrocket
sure.
for the park district and the city and everything else?
Right.
That's a great question. And, you know, I think, God, they make so much money at Lollapalooza, but it goes to the concert promoters mainly.
It does, and there have been some questions. Again, this is from a WTTW story from some of the reporting that Jim has done. But basically, there's a relationship between the mayor and he's written some stories about cozy relationships, because the company that jointly owns Lollapalooza has ties to the mayor and the mayor's brother, and there's just doesn't seem to or the mayor's brother, I should say. There are still questions every year as to how much the city is getting and whether we should be getting more out of this huge event, which
it's still good for the city, isn't it? Though I mean,
there's a prestige standpoint that's good. There's got to be some tourism benefit. There has to be.
Only 12 arrests in the first 2 days.
That's not bad.
Yeah, no, there has to be an economic impact. I mean, all these kids, we're sitting in the studio and you saw people wandering around downtown. They're shopping, they're
right.
going to restaurants, they're staying somewhere. But it's just strange that I don't know that we've ever been able to trust and gotten just a straight up and down impact of what the festival is.
Are they more secretive about these numbers than they are with things like Chicago Fest or the Air and Water Show or Venetian Night? All those, are those easy to find, like the economic impact that the city has from those?
Is
it about the same?
I feel like we've learned more about Taste of Chicago, because even when it was losing money for a while, we sort of knew that it was losing money. And it could be that the numbers are just hard to track. But there's also a case, one of my friends in television broadcast recently tweeted something out, and he was referencing a Cranes article by Greg Hines, who covers politics, where Greg said, I got duped by the mayor's office again regarding budget numbers. Mm-hmm. And it is a problem that it you do feel like you're always being spun by the mayor's office. So even when there's good news, you wonder if you can trust what the numbers are that the mayor's office is putting out there.
Malia Obama was there. Did anybody see her rocking out?
I didn't. I saw that there were tweets about it, and I think she's gone the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for her. She can't go anywhere without somebody videotaping her.
I know. And she was just trying to watch The Killers.
Right.
The headline, there's a video, and you can get it at TMZ. That's who's
of course,
doing it. It's Rockin'
right.
Obama.
Jeez. I like the name.
Yeah. I don't know.
Do you say in the future, what could they do, should they do, to make this a little more transparent so that we know what exactly is what? Is there a way to go about doing that?
I mean, maybe just a really clear before and after press conference. And if it is losing money, or if we need to renegotiate contracts with some of these vendors, let's have that discussion. I'm just kind of hoarding of public parkland being used for something that, as a taxpayer, it's unclear to me what the benefit is to me as a taxpayer.
Kristen right. McQueary says, hey, get off my lawn.
I know. I am. It's so true. I walked down there on Friday when I mentioned I was watching all the people coming through. And I listen to music a lot while I'm walking around the city. And I literally had like Stevie Wonder and probably some 50s tunes. And I'm too old for that type of activity in the city.
Do we want to take this call?
Sure.
All right, Chuck's on the line. What's up, Chuck? I love when people say that.
How you guys doing? I love your show.
Thanks, Chuck.
I was going to say, you know, up in Milwaukee, they have Festival Park, which is a beautiful park. They have the land right along the lakefront. And Milwaukee does not have maybe as much money as here in Chicago. Well, now, Brook County, I guess we can call it. Wouldn't it be nice if we can build a park, something like that, where we don't have to tear down and set up all the time and destroy the land and just have it easy flow, easy in, easy out?
And think of all the fests we actually have here. There's Blues Fest, Jazz Fest. It would be nice to have some set place that it happens all the time.
Right. I think that's what we don't really know, is how much city workers are having to pay, or whoever they contract with for security and for cleanup, what sort of, you know, cost that really has to Chicagoans.
Good idea, Chuck.
All right, no problem. Have a good day.
You would also need, you're talking about a huge tract of land to make this work.
Yeah.
And I don't know where that would be.
Soldier Field, nobody's using it.
Nobody's using it.
Let's corral them all over there.
I like
that. I'll be there Thursday.
All right, let's take a quick break and then more with Kristen McQueary of the Chicago Tribune. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We're talking with Kristen McQueary of the Chicago Tribune, and we're talking about a whole bunch of things. Did we want to switch gears?
Yeah, you know what I'm curious about is, you know, Donald Trump's presidency
He's president?
Yeah, he became president, Wendy, in November. He won the election. This is a strange story. All right, so now there's been some talk that some Republicans are already looking to the next election, in which case you have the possibility of it being Trump versus Pence. And I'm fascinated by this. What do you make out of all this?
Well, there was a story, I think, in yesterday's New York Times that Mike Pence has started already gearing up for a race against Trump in 2020.
He's distancing himself a little bit. There's been a lot of things that I thought, well, at some point they'll ask Mike Pence what he thinks about this. And it's not happening.
No, I mean, with he put out a statement, which he rarely does, Mike Pence, calling the story, you know, a complete fabrication, that he has no intention to run against Donald Trump, that he is proud, we're making America great again. And
yeah.
I think part of that it is when you are the vice president, your job is to protect the president.
Yeah.
And the second you put any sort of a wedge between those two roles, it could be detrimental, not just to the presidency, but to the country.
Right.
So he is someone, you'll recall, Donald Trump had a hard time even finding a running mate. So Mike Pence already has risked his whole credibility by running with him and now serving as his vice president. So he's going to stay on that train for it unless something really dramatic happens.
Couldn't it have been a brilliant strategy from day one for whoever advised him to say, Mike, take the job because most of America isn't aware of you? And they weren't.
And we weren't.
If you lived in Indiana, you knew who he was. But with the exception of Indiana, very few people had Mike Pence on their radar. So somebody could have said to him, this is such a great career move. Just take the job and lay low. Just be in the office of vice president. And that's it. Don't agree. Don't disagree. Just get your name out there. Wouldn't that have been a smart strategy?
Yes. And that's partly probably why he ended up being the 16th or 17th person who the Trump campaign approached. And he finally said yes. But also because Trump has been so volatile, Mike Pence really is risking everything by he did when he ran with him, and he is now by serving under him. But I think he understands that for the good of the country, he cannot in any way at this moment be seen as someone who's willing to run against Trump. Now, that doesn't mean other campaigns aren't up and running. They are. I was at the Republican convention last year, so this would have been August of 2016 when Trump was nominated, but before he was elected. And so all those other Republicans had already been bumped out, like Scott Walker, Rand Paul. They were already gearing up to campaign then. So, like, you had Scott Walker holding fundraisers, talking a little bit about 2020. Those, you will see a lot of those names come back. The Ted Cruz's, the people who ran against Trump for the nomination. But the idea of the vice president creating some sort of a visual, even, that he's being disloyal to the president would be bad. And so he batted the story away and says it's all, you know, a fabrication.
Bill, it's true that I didn't know who Mike Pence was prior to this, and many didn't.
Sure.
But then you have people that are so outraged by Donald Trump being the president that would sway negatively towards Mike Pence. Like, any guy who's going to serve under Trump, I don't want.
Yeah.
Conversely, if he does want to do his own thing, there's a lot of people that do not like Donald Trump that would go, oh, man, I would totally be for him.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely he's getting his name out there, but I don't know, even though I know who he is, I don't know that I'd ever vote for him.
Well, right. And I think in the timing of this story, when we're also learning that there is, in fact, a grand jury looking into the case of Russian connections, which is a pretty big deal. I mean, now you've moved on from...
Not according to Donald Trump,
well,
though.
Of course not. It's all a witch hunt, and,
right.
You know, they're expanding the scope of the investigation beyond their legal right by looking into his finances, which I think is all ridiculous. Your finances are ground zero in an investigation into everything that you do and whatever connections you might have. And we also don't know, the grand jury might not be looking at Trump as a target. We've actually heard they're not. So it could be his associates, you know, the Paul Manafort, the Carter Nelsons, Michael Flynn, people who around him were maybe trying to profit or drive, you know, have big conflicts of interest during the campaign and shortly after he won. So, but in the context of all of that going on, to have this story that maybe Mike Pence is waiting in the wings, I think was damaging, really damaging to Trump in a way that Mike Pence understood. And that's why he came out so strongly against the story.
I can't remember the exact situation, but very early on, after Mike Pence signed on to be the vice presidential candidate, Trump said something, and the reason it's so hard for me to remember is because he has said so many things that are kind of questionable. But they went to Mike Pence and go, "What do you make of what Donald Trump just said?" And he goes, "Oh, you know, sometimes Donald just says stuff. You know, he just kind of shrugged it off."
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, "That's going to be the blueprint of the next 4 years for him. Anytime they go to him with any question, he's going to go, that's the way Donald Trump operates. He just says stuff."
And he's defended him, right? I mean, he's defended Trump whenever asked. He also, as to your point, has kind of stayed out of the limelight. When I said that he issued a press release about this New York Times story, very uncommon. He has not, He has not been out in front. He doesn't join the, you know, he stands in the background at some of these rallies, but you don't see him even really introducing the president
right.
anymore.
Right.
So I don't know what there probably is a group that is preparing to for if something happens with Trump, if he does get impeached or there's a forced removal or something, there has to be a succession plan. It would be Mike Pence. And so maybe the news reporter got wind of all of that is going on. But the idea that he would, Mike Pence right now, be talking about running against Donald Trump in 2020 feels like
premature.
A stretch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there is some kind of impeachment process that's going to happen, which I don't think it will, isn't Mike Pence kind of guilty of some of this too? Has it ever been thought of that maybe they both could get removed from office? And then what do we do? And I know you're looking at me crazily, but
this is my concentration phase.
Oh, okay. Because I'm just saying some of these things that sound like they will never happen have already happened.
Oh, sure. No, and you're right. We don't really know. We know that Pence felt that he was lied to by Michael Flynn, and that's why Michael Flynn was removed. But we don't know what rooms maybe Mike Pence was in when discussions were happening. We don't know if Mike Pence has been deposed as part of this Russia investigation, whether some of his records have been subpoenaed. We really don't know. All of this is very undercover at this moment. So, but to your point, anything could happen. He could get dragged into this too. So far, he hasn't. But you never know with this group.
Anytime people try to predict who the next presidential candidates will be for the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, we're more than 3 years removed from that next election. It's so premature to even guess who the top candidate would be because so many things happen in the interim between now and that election cycle. It's almost impossible. I mean, you can't.
I mean, we had, I think the Republicans, were there 21 or 22 candidates initially who were in the race? Who would have guessed Donald Trump would be the nominee? If he survives the next 2.5 years, he is going to be the nominee. It's very unlikely that someone would be able to topple a sitting president. That said, the people who came closest, those are always the names of, you know, Mitt Romney ran three times?
Yeah.
Was it three?
I think it was three.
Wow.
Yeah. You will probably hear more about the Ted Cruzes and maybe even the Scott Walkers, the governor from Wisconsin, you know, at least toying with the idea of getting back in.
But when a president's approval rating is in the low 30 percentile, doesn't that make the party say, boy, if we want to continue and have another Republican president, we have to consider our options? Do you think the whole party would back Donald Trump even though he's been president? You get the feeling that with this kind of an approval rating, they would go in a different direction, don't you?
If he's doing that poorly, perhaps. But again, we're so early into his term that it's hard to predict what his approval ratings are. And he, you know, those are just fake,
right,
Bill? Those approval ratings, all those,
no,
all
I
that.
Know.
He only believes the polls that, you know,
that are favorable
to him.
Right.
So I don't know. We'll see. So far he has been able to keep, even though it wobbles, he's able to keep that little collection of his base and Republican members of the House and Senate to stick with him.
Yes.
You know, they're trying to get their policy positions through. They want health care reform. They want tax reform. So they're still hanging on.
Right.
But if all of them turn, that would be really problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kristen McQuarrie writes for the Chicago Tribune. Read her whenever you can. Thank you for stopping by. Greatly appreciated. A quick break, then we'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.